Jimmy Corrane is the improviser's improviser and a teacher and a podcaster, the host and producer for many years now of the Improv Nerd podcast. And I have finally tracked him down so he can talk about who he is and what he does and really how big of a nerd are you?
In real life, I'm a huge nerd.
Good morning, good afternoon, good evening, whatever it is, wherever you are. Thanks for subscribing, streaming, or downloading and listening to us on your computer or tablet or phone. I'm Austin Titchener, one third of the Reduced Shakespeare Company, and you're listening to this week's Reduced Shakespeare Company podcast, number 555, The Improv Nerd. Jimmy Corrane is an improviser, teacher, and the creator and host of the Improv Nerd with Jimmy Corrane podcast. And last week he sat down with me on a beautiful Chicago morning to chat with me about his improv and performing philosophies with only the sound of construction trucks in the background for accompaniment.
How did you get started? I mean, we've known each other for 20 years or so, and you're a fixture and dare I say a guru now in the Chicago. Do you hate that word?
Yes, I don't like that word.
Okay,
that makes me very uncomfortable.
And you're right. I think it's right. You're right, yeah, to feel uncomfortable. But you are a fixture and a great teacher here in Chicago. What drew you to improv in the first place?
Well, I came from a family where we couldn't express ourselves, yeah, and after I graduated from high school, I didn't know what I was going to do. And I'd gone to Second City when I was in high school, and I saw it, and I thought, it was always in the back of my mind. And of course, Saturday Night Live, the original cast with Belushi and Bill Murray and Gilda, yeah, Radner and stuff like that, was one of the first TV shows that had made me laugh. So I took about a year and a half off, didn't know what to do. I grew up out here on the North Shore, so if you didn't go to college, there was a lot of shame involved because all your friends went away to college.
Sure.
And so I started taking classes at a place called the Players Workshop of Second City, and then I just fell in love with it. And what I really loved about it was everything that I had been punished for as a kid, I was now being rewarded in improv.
Interesting. And so, what, things like feelings, brains, you know, our intelligence?
Yeah, that, and just the ability to express myself and to really, like, in my house, you couldn't express joy, you couldn't express any feeling, you couldn't express anger. So I developed this really good sarcastic wit because that was my way to backdoor it.
Uh-huh.
But you still couldn't, you couldn't be creative. You felt like you were in a box. So when I started to improvise at the Players Workshop, there's all these other people who were f-ups like me, and we all came together,
yeah,
and now it wasn't just in a box, it was just like anything goes. And I think it was that freedom and that acceptance that I really thrived.
Well, it's interesting you say that because you know, I'm now taking your improv class, which I'm loving, by the way, and these are the kinds of the detail that you're getting us to do is all the stuff you're talking about, and it's about being grounded emotionally, what's happening with emotion, and being grounded in the physical space that you're in. Scenes can be created out of your environment and your being, your feelings. You don't have to come running on and say a lot of clever shit, you know?
Yeah, and that, you know, like for me, that's like the most important thing,
yeah,
and is I want, you know, when I go to see improv, I want to believe what's coming out of people's mouths.
Right.
And every good improviser that I ever got to work with was always a good actor. Like,
yeah,
they emotionally react. They take the imaginative circumstances seriously.
Right.
And that's like theater. You know, an improv can be more like good theater, and it can be more like, you know, stand up and let's be real clever.
Right.
But I've always kind of gravitated towards the slow, more honest scene work.
Interesting. And so do you see, it's a debate with no answer, and it's probably pointless too, but is improv a process or a product for you?
I think when I started out, it was a product because I wanted to get hired by Second City, and then I wanted to be on Saturday Night Live and then become famous. So
right.
I always put way too much pressure on myself.
Yeah.
And even as a teacher, it was a product. Like, I want my students to have a breakthrough, which,
mm-hmm,
is totally effed up.
Mm-hmm.
I'm going to just tell you that.
Mm-hmm.
So I would say in the last 5 or 6 years, I've made this transition of it is a process. Like, take the pressure off myself when I improvise, that I have to have some sort of result or feel something.
Yeah.
And also when I'm in class, like, take the pressure off myself that you've got to get the lesson that I'm trying to teach you.
Right. Is that a thing? And I improvisers, you know, as you know, I my lines are mostly scripted and I rarely improvise. And I feel quite comfortable when I've rehearsed a scene. I feel less comfortable when I'm improvising, but I feel the more I do it, the more comfortable I get. Is that place of comfort come with just experience, or have you seen, you know, kids that have it right out of the gate?
I've seen people have like natural ability, but your experience of it's a muscle. You're working out. So the more you do it, the more comfortable you're going to be, and the more confidence you're going to be the more you do it.
Do you teach the sort of it's because the class I'm taking, you're not teaching it this way, but do you teach other classes where it is more sort of punchline driven, more sort of whose line is it anyway, or is that a whole different ball of wax?
Well, I think what you're talking about, whose line, is more short form games. And what I teach is more scenic improv, long form style scene improv. So and then again, that's what I like to watch, and that's what I like to do.
Well, in this class, at least so far, is that we're not learning even long form. Long form has a structure too, but we're not learning those structures just yet. We're learning all the basic stuff, which is great about being in the moment and in the scene.
Yeah, and for the first level, I think it's really important is I really work on like hoping that the students take the pressure off themselves to be funny and just let's just have a conversation up there. Let's put them in a situation. I think last night's class that you were in, it was basically, okay, we're going to do scenes where you go into a Starbucks and you order something, and let's just see all the details of that transaction. And I want people to feel that comfortable. And I've done that exercise, my God, I'd say for 10 years, and I always find most of them compelling to watch.
Yeah, and it's something about the accumulation of detail, which feels, well, this isn't funny. This is just, you know, I added the bit about being on Weight Watchers last night, which that's not funny, but it's a detail, and it's truthful, and it's characterful. It's revealing of character. So I felt like, well, I don't even know why I'm saying this, but I'm saying it. But you were saying it was a great detail.
Yeah, because that's something. You know, you hear in improv all the time, find your voice or tap into your life experience. Yeah. You were going up there consciously or subconsciously. You don't know why you said it.
Right.
But now we know a little about you. We know a little about Austin. And then if you're going to take that and make that into a character, you may heighten an aspect of the Weight Watchers thing. Yeah. But you're sharing something from us, and it's coming from an honest place versus, okay, I've got to create something funny, so I'm just going to say Weight Watchers, which isn't what you said.
Right. Well, and I think that speaks to something also that I love about the best actors, is that the best actors are coming from who they are. They're not putting on this mask of a character. The character is coming from them. Does that make sense?
Yeah, and you know this better than I do because you act, but the times that I've acted, I think it's really fun when you do get a script and then you start revealing yourself.
Yeah.
That to me is like acting.
Yeah. I've got this thing I can bring to these lines.
Right, because, maybe I've experienced the same kind of pain, or maybe I feel shame that the character did, and I'm going to tap into that.
Hello, I am Jacob C. McDonald, social media coordinator at Ghostlight Players from Marlboro, Massachusetts, and you are listening to the Reduced Shakespeare Company podcast.
Where can you RSC the RSC? This week, James Percy, Matt Pearson, and Joe Maudsley begin performing William Shakespeare's long-lost first play Abridged at the Gilded Balloon in Edinburgh. If you're here before this Sunday, you can see me in one of the bars or in the back of the theater. And next month, starting in September, you can see us perform all the great books Abridged, William Shakespeare's long-lost first play Abridged, and the ultimate Christmas show Abridged across the U.S. in Culver and South Bend, Indiana, West Long Branch, New Jersey, Aiken, South Carolina, Davis, California, Laramie, Wyoming, Asheville, North Carolina, Maryville, Tennessee, Somerville, New Jersey, San Jose, California, Algona, Iowa, Reston, Virginia, and La Mirada, California. And also this September, you can see us perform the complete works of William Shakespeare, Abridged, Revised, in Hong Kong and Singapore. Tickets are on sale now. And next winter, we'll be performing William Shakespeare's long-lost first play, Abridged, off-Broadway at the New Victory Theater in New York City. And next June and July, we'll return to the Pittsburgh Public Theater to close out their season with our production of William Shakespeare's long-lost first play, Abridged. As always, the very best way to stay up to date about all of our worldwide performance dates is to sign up for the Reduced Reader, our email newsletter. Go to ReducedShakespeare.com and click on the link to subscribe and check out our touring page for specific box office venue and ticket information. And now back to my conversation with improviser, teacher, and podcaster, Jimmy Carain.
So what then led you to create the Improv Nerd podcast? Is it an extension of the teaching?
Yeah, I think one of the things is that, my God, so when I started out in the back in the 80s with my group of people, and I've told the story many times, if you were going to say, I'm an improv teacher or director, they would say, what the f*** are you doing? You are totally selling out. We're all supposed to be performers. We're all supposed to be famous. And, you know, the longer I've been doing it, the more I realize that, you know what, I'm getting really, really, really good at this, you know?
And we know so few famous people. We know some, but there are more infamous, non-famous people than there are famous people.
Yes, you're absolutely right. Yeah. And so, you know, part of me was like, this is an extension of my teaching, because I love interviewing people. I had done it for 10 years on public radio, and I love pulling stories out of people. I love storytelling, pulling stories out of people. And it was like, improv is something that I knew, you know, was familiar with, so let's bring improvisers. And it has evolved into like a teaching tool, because there's a lot of people in smaller markets or in other countries that aren't exposed to this.
Yeah.
But to really answer your question, part of it was I wasn't known anymore. Even though I had been here, the cycle in Chicago changes so quickly. So it used to be people would spend 8 or 10 years learning improv and comedy and stuff like that. They didn't do that anymore. And I was out, I was doing an improv show, and afterwards we all met with some students of Tim O'Malley. I think Tim, great improviser, great teacher. And nobody knew me. My wife was there, Lauren, and she's like, basically, nobody knows you.
Yeah.
So you have to reinvent yourself. Mm. So I was like, okay, this is going to put me back out there, because I have a tendency of hiding.
Ah.
Yeah.
Well, yeah, and it's hard to hide when you're, you know, on stage interviewing folks, too. But I didn't know about your glorious public radio past.
Yeah, I had done, for like 10 years, I had interviewed people on public radio, and I then developed a segment called Studio 312, where I would interview authors, a lot of comedy people. One of my favorite ones was Conan O'Brien.
Nice.
And it was just very similar to this. We were sharing a microphone, and he had like 20 minutes, and it was at the Chicago Theater, because he had come into Chicago to do, he was doing his late night show on NBC. And Brian Stack, who's a mutual friend of ours, finagled whatever he could do to get me 20 minutes, and we had a microphone, and we would pass it back like we were passing an ice cream cone.
Right.
And he couldn't have been more gracious and more funny and more really very thoughtful in the interview.
Yeah. Studio 312, 312 being the area code of Chicago.
Yeah, and there was it was on a show called 848, which was the address of WBEZ, which was like 848, North Orleans or whatever, was it? Navy Pier.
Yeah.
And I'm like, you know what? The address worked. Let's do the area code.
Perfect. Perfect. Well, and there is something about what you were saying, too, is that you like interviewing people. You like the conversations. I mean, that's one of the reasons that I started the RSC podcast, is that I have so many interesting conversations with people around the world, theater folks, comedians, improvisers, authors, actors. And it's like I had this impulse of, oh, my God, this is so interesting what you're saying. I wish everybody could hear it. And so that's started my podcast.
Yeah. And, you know, the other thing I like about the audio form of podcasts and even radio, it is the best form for conversation, because I'm not worried about camera. Right. I'm not worried. I'm a little self-conscious because I'm being recorded. But for the most part, it's I believe it's the purest conversation device or medium that we have for conversations. And I love conversations.
Yeah. So how long have you been doing the podcast now?
It's going to be in September or October, probably 6 years.
Oh, my goodness. Yeah, you're an early pioneer.
Yeah.
That's awesome. And you record them live, too.
I do record them live. I started out, for the most part, recording them live. And then I would say in the last couple of years, we do phone interviews or we'll do something like this. I'll go to somebody's, if they're in for a movie, a hotel suite, or, you know, I'll go to Second City or...
Right, right. Yeah, no, I, and the live aspect, I've loved to do a live one, but I'm not that organized. It's much easier to arrange a backyard meeting like this.
Well, this is much easier because, for a lot of reasons, but I always put pressure on myself because the live one, it is a performance.
Yes.
So you've got to do that, and then you've got to promote the show to make sure you get bodies in the seats, and then when we do it, we have a three-camera shoot because we have a Patreon now. We've just launched a Patreon.
Very cool.
Where we're gonna release every once a month. We'll have a full episode of and we have a backlog of a lot of live episodes. So it's that, and then we have a director, and you have to worry about the sound. Here, you just show up in your backyard, and you know you've got this little device, and you know when we're done, you can post it.
Yeah, we're not even wearing any clothes.
No, we're not, and it's hot out, which is great.
Yeah, thank
God.
We're
drinking iced tea.
Yes, we are. See, more detail work.
Yes, excellent. It's all about God is in the details.
I am sticking to this seat too, and that's gonna. I'm gonna need to high pressure hose it off. You just performed at the Chicago Improv Festival with my wife Dee Ryan recently, and do you perform a lot now?
No, I perform about once a month with John Hildreth. It was Jimmy and Johnny, and that was such a high point to get to work with Dee, John. Myself and then Joe List.
And
Dee had gotten the time screwed up and then she showed up. Yeah. I mean, it was like couldn't have been better for improv.
She showed up 10 minutes into the thing because we were literally 10 minutes away and she went, shit, it started enough. It's starting right now.
And then John just like very gracefully pulled her on stage and just made her part of the scene. And that's the part of improv that is, like in theater, that would never happen. If you had a scripted play, that would never happen.
Right.
But improv, there's room for that to happen. And that's what makes it so exciting, not only for the audience, but for the players. Because you can, as an improviser, I've been doing it for so long, especially when you play with the same people, there's kind of like, oh, we're going to play this relationship. We're going to play this scene. It's not the same words, but it's the same dynamic. Yeah. And so when Dee was late, it became a great thing because now we have to deal with something. The audience sees it. We see it. And we've just got to embrace it.
And it's one of those great theatrical moments that gets back to the thing we were talking about, is improv product or process. This was a great product, and it's an organic theatrical moment of, oh my God, they're not acting. This shit's really happening.
Yeah, and that's what's so great about live improv,
yeah.
You know, that you cannot duplicate,
yeah.
You know? And it was, you'll never see another show like that again. Dee might be late the next time, or I might be late, but it doesn't, but it'll play out differently.
You'll turn it into something.
Yeah.
Yeah.
You can't go and plan and say, look, Dee, show up late for the next show, 10 minutes late. I mean, you know what? Make it 15 minutes late. Really throw us, you know? Because it wouldn't work.
That's it for this week's Reduced Shakespeare Company podcast. You can download the Improv Nerd with Jimmy Corain podcast at iTunes and at Jimmy's website, jimmycorain.com, where you can also find out more about his classes and everything else he's doing. Then send us details about your environment via email to feedback@reducedshakespeare.com. You can also engage with us and other fans on Facebook or Twitter. You can find easy links to all these social networks at our website, reducedshakespeare.com. You can also follow me on Twitter, @AustinTichner, and the RSC is now on Instagram, too, @ReducedShakespeareCompany. Thanks, as always, to long short form clown Matthew Croak, web services by Ginger Power Limited, music by John Weber and Garage Band. Our random fan shout out this week goes to Madeline Adkins. No reason, it's just random. Although she is an old friend from high school. Hi, Madeline. Special thanks to Jacob C. McDonald of the Ghostlight Players, who will be performing their production of Hamlet here at the Edinburgh Fringe this August of 2017. Find out more at ghostlightplayers.com. And finally, thanks very much to you for listening. I'm Austin Titchener, 555 1665ths of the Reduced Shakespeare Company.
The one thing I nerd out besides comedy and improv is I love grocery stores. Like, I love going to grocery stores. Mm-hmm. So I'm a huge, like, grocery store nerd. When we go on vacation, I'm always like to my wife, poor Lauren, I'm like, we got to go to this grocery store. And so we check it out. And I feel, once I get into a grocery store, I feel really safe.
Well, that now begs the question, why is, do you also host a grocery store podcast?
No, but I'd love to.
This podcast is a production of the Reduce Shakespeare Company, reducing expectations since 1981. Go to reducedshakespeare.com for performance dates, actor bios, email newsletters, and so much less.
So much less. So much less.